you, our listeners, and the community you live in. Speak Out is all about listener participation. So call in anytime during the show. 928-854-5687. That's 854-5687. Speak Out on KNTR Talk is heard on 106.7, 5, and 3. You can also listen at KNTRTalk.com and listen anywhere through the TuneIn Radio app. From elected officials, community leaders, small business owners, school district representatives, and charitable causes, Speak Out is here for you on KNTR Talk. It's time to introduce you to the host of Speak Out. When legendary drummer Keith Moon was MIA, who did the Who turn to?
Yo, Paulie!
When the great Pele asked for a sub, who did his World Cup team turn to?
Yo, Paulie!
Now this world-renowned musician slash athlete has settled behind the microphone once again for your benefit. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only, I mean, could you imagine a twin? Paul Lavoie.
You can lay me down and watch me bleed, but you can't keep no chains on me. I was born free.
All right, welcome to Speak Out. It's Tuesday, May 16th, 2023. I've been pretty pumped about today's show for a while because although I had two guests over the phone, nobody in the studio, they're two very important guests. One of them, a good friend of mine from Sewickley, Pennsylvania, right outside of Pittsburgh. And he's all about the trucking industry. And, you know, if there's somebody I'm going to send in the substitute for Pele, it's not me, man. It's Scott Beatty-Kiefer from Sweetwater Express. And he's also a Landstar trucking agent. You played a little soccer, didn't you?
Well, I didn't play much soccer. Actually, soccer around here didn't really evolve until later, and now lacrosse has kind of come into the area.
Right.
We were basically the regular football, basketball, baseball. You know, that was the gig back then. So
yeah, right. And hockey, of course, for you guys.
Oh yeah,
you're a big Penguins fan. I know that.
Hockey in Pittsburgh did not come along until after Marley Mew came to Pittsburgh.
Oh, no kidding.
Before that, there were only a couple skating rinks in the area at all. And once Marley Mew came in, it was a launch, and now we have hockey everywhere.
Well, you still have Sidney Crosby, right?
We still do have Sid, and we still do have Evgeny Malkin, and we still have a base of a team. Didn't do too well this year, but I'm still very bullish on the Penguins. So.
You're a big Pitt Panthers fan too. I know that. So
well, I'm a big Pitt Panthers fan because both my wife and our daughter. Our daughter's presently going to University of Pittsburgh, but yes.
Nice. All right, so Scott Beatty-Kiefer again on the show today. We're going to talk all about trucking, and for the next half hour anyway, we have the phone lines open. If you have a question, it's 928-854-5687. Our second half guest is going to join us by phone on that line, so you're going to want to call in before the bottom of the hour. His name is Pell Fakhrian, and he's with a company called Callbacks 911, and he is the chief growth officer for that company. And what we're going to talk about is a rule from the Federal Trade Commission. You'll appreciate this, Scott. It's called the click to cancel rule. You know, when you sign up for these subscriptions for Prime or Sling or any of these streaming services, I think it applies to even more than that. You practically have to dig, sometimes go to a totally different website to cancel the subscription, and usually it's in the frequently asked questions. It's a really hard find. So what the FTC is doing is they're going to require these sites, these services, to put a simple link on the home page or on the first page where you subscribe that says cancel. It's as simple as that. But of course, these companies don't want you to find that button. So we're going to be talking.
Customer service is a horrible situation these days,
right,
with any company.
Right.
And you and I have probably been inundated with junk mail. And that was something that the federal government did as well, as give us the ability to unenroll in junk mail that comes in. But it comes in so fast that you can't keep ahead of it. So
I get one from a credit card company that is unbelievable, you know, and I do have an account with them, although it is a consolidation account. That's what I use it for. But they send me this stuff, and it's got checks in there to write out to charge to the account. And I'm just like, really? You know, so I either have to get a hold of them, write them a letter or something that says, you know, quit sending me this stuff because I'm not going to take advantage of any of your offers. So anyway, that's kind of a sidebar. That's what we'll be talking about in the second half hour is this click to cancel rule. But, Scott, you're following a lot of stuff in the trucking industry right now, and there's a lot of green regs that are going on. And right next door to us in California, there's a bill that's gone through the legislature or is going through California Assembly Bill 5. And you want to talk about its impact on owner-operators when it comes to trucking?
Well, again, the owner-operators, I'm with Landstar, and they're an owner-operator-based company. We do not have any assets of our own as a corporation. Owner-operators are the lifeblood of a lot of the transportation industry. And the reason why we have owner-operators is because they don't want to drive a company truck, work for a company. They want to feel a freedom when they're out on the road. Well, the problem is, you know, obviously we're kind of geared towards California, but the biggest concern is when something starts in California, they kind of leach out into other states and they put ideas in. The California AB 5 law, it came for the assembly. It actually was enacted in 2019, and then there was an injunction, and there was a court battle. But then in June of 2020, the injunction was lifted, and AB 5 became retroactive back to January of 2020. Mm-hmm. Now, Governor Newsom signed it, and what it was intent to do was to take away the predatory situation where you would have maybe a young woman or young man wanting to get into the transportation industry. They have their CDL. They want to become a driver, but they want to become an independent contractor. And what they would do is they would go sign up with a company that maybe that is offering a lease purchase program.
Okay.
Where somebody would sign on with the company, they'd make payments to them through their settlements, and they'd try to pay the truck off and become their own boss. Well, what it was is exactly what it is. It was a predatory situation where these people would sign contracts and with no hopes of ever paying off that note and never becoming that independent person that they were. Mm-hmm. The companies were taking advantage of them. So what they did was they decided, well, you know what, we're going to make it so we're going to make a situation where there's basically, they call it the ABC test. And they want to have people have three different checkpoints in their lives where they are, if they don't fall as a 1099 employee, then they should be an employee of the company, which means they get time off, they get benefits, and they get a base salary or income and a steady income.
Okay.
Well, what they did was it kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater, because instead of correcting that one part where they were taking advantage of contractors in a disadvantaged situation, what they did was there's probably an estimated 70,000 truck drivers or owner operators domiciled in the state of California.
Really?
So of those 70,000, once that law came into place, they basically had what would you say about a handful of choices? They either had to move their residency out of California, maybe apportion themselves or register themselves in Arizona or Nevada. They could go and set up their own authority and become their own company.
Okay.
But that comes with a lot of costs. That comes with the administrative fees, the compliance situations, the insurance and everything, because small carriers get really manhandled by our insurance companies. Remember back our conversation about about liability insurance and how crazy that business is. Well, that's the reason why a lot of these owner-operators go work for companies, is so that they have somebody running the back office for them.
Somebody else assumes the liability for them.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's a group liability as well. Or they could actually sell their truck and become an employee, go to work for a large carrier that has company iron, or they could just decide not to, just to deadhead out of California, because the process is, if you are disqualified through AB5, you can deliver a load into California, but you're not allowed to pick a load up out of California. So think about that. Let's say a driver is coming into California to deliver in Long Beach. He can't pick up a load in Long Beach. He has to deadhead to Nevada or California.
So he's got to drive an empty truck 300 miles out of Long Beach to the next state?
Right, exactly.
That's insane.
Right. So obviously it displaced a lot of drivers, and it has. That law has passed. It is in place.
Oh, wow.
And unfortunately, what it does is it just adds on to the burden of the California citizens. I mean, as much as, you know, we want to protect people, we've basically kind of destroyed lives in the process.
Okay, so what about those app-based contractors that drive Uber or Lyft? Does this affect them in any way?
Well, I don't know. I think the interesting part about it is that there was something called Prop 22.
Okay.
And it was approved in 2020, November of 2020. 60% of voters basically said, yeah, this will work for us. Basically, they gave the gig workers, the people that are running Uber and Lyft and Uber Eats and all these delivery services and whatnot, they gave them a buy. They basically said, and maybe it's just because the perception of the regular Californian was, this will affect me because I'm used to going to, you know, the club and calling an Uber and them picking me up to take me home. And I'm used to calling one of the food delivery services and having them go pick up my food order at the local restaurant, bring it to me. So this affects me directly. The problem is what they don't realize with foreshadowing is that the other side affects them indirectly as well. So, but the whole of it is there was actually a law passed. It was Prop 22 that basically allowed these gig workers to bypass the AB5.
So last time we talked, there was a lot of talk about the supply side issues. Drivers, the shortage of drivers and that sort of thing. How are things going now? It's been about 3 or 4 months since we've talked to you. How are things going now that it's, you know, almost Memorial Day and, the trucking industry? It still seems like there's a few industries that experience supply issues, but, how's it going now overall for you as you're booking drivers through Landstar?
I will tell you that as the economy softened, and when the federal government raised the interest rates and so they wanted to slow the economy, well, it slows the transportation industry as well. It's that supply and demand situation. There's not a lot of freight, and so there's a lot of competition for the freight that's available. So the pricing has gone down immensely, and the drivers are feeling the squeeze of it. I would say in some cases you're looking at rates cut by 50% in some places where, and again, the fuel costs haven't changed. They've actually risen. The cost of doing business in California has risen because of the Clean Air Acts and all that, and having to have the proper equipment, and you're not allowed to have a truck that's an older truck in California. Running a business has increased, but the amount of freight and the rates have dropped immensely in a number of places. Now, we're talking about spot market freight. We're not talking about contract freight. However, some companies strategize, and they will actually, at this point in time, try to renegotiate pricing while everything's low. And that way, they're protected when things grow back up again. But yeah, as far as the supply chain, there are still sectors of the business that people can't find things. I actually had a conversation with a friend of mine the other day. They are in the automotive industry.
Uh-huh.
And you're still having a problem with getting this, something as simple as a remote starter because the chips aren't available.
Right.
You know, and just specific things. The plastics market went crazy over COVID. How many places you go in that they had to put PVC up and they separated the people and they had to have these basically the salad bar splash guards everywhere, right?
Right.
Well, what do you think? Where do you think that all of that plastic went to? In that, well, there's a shortage of plastic.
Oh, okay.
So think about all the components that are made of plastic.
Well, let me give you a little lead for in the future. There are huge semiconductor factories being built in Maricopa County right now in Phoenix. Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, TSMC. I believe there's three of them. So once they're up and running, that situation may change, and there may be some additional freight opportunities for you as well.
Well, that's the whole part of it. I think we learned over COVID and after all the supply chain issues and it wasn't an embargo from China. It was just a really bad situation.
Yeah, right, right.
Where we couldn't get the products that we needed, and a lot of it got stuck out in those containers, out on the ships and the ports and whatnot. There are a lot of companies that are saying, well, you know what, wait. We went through that. We are going to start insourcing. We're going to start doing things in Pittsburgh or in the country instead.
Right.
And you're like, and you think to yourself, we hear about the Build Back Better. We hear about all that. One thing that COVID did, I think it taught us a valuable lesson about doing things here in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
But you're not going to get away from the Walmart model. People want things immediately and they want things cheap. So you're not going to eliminate it, but you are going to see a lot more control in the market.
Yeah, absolutely. Scotty, we got to take a break.
Okay.
We'll come right back and we'll talk more about the industry and what's impacting trucking across the U.S. right now with Scott Badekiefer. He's the owner of Sweetwater Express, and he's a Landstar trucking agent. Back with more in a moment on Speak Out. I'm Paul Lavoie. Here's some music by the Cults. A little music by the Scorpions. I know your taste in music, which is pretty much the same as mine, right?
I was going to say, what do you mean?
Exactly. All right, Speak Out brought to you in part by Mojave Mortgage. Love those guys. Also, Bradley Chevrolet and Bradley Ford. GDK LLC, Springberg Wealth Management, Patio Paradise, Les Olson IT, your company's one source for office technology. They're at lesolson.com/Kingman. And by The Chair, Havasu-style dining and great music with live entertainment in a flip-flop atmosphere overlooking the London Bridge. It's The Chair. And don't forget, we stream live, and our show archives are at kntrtalk.com. Show will be posted shortly after we're done today at noon. And also on the Lake Havasu City app, available at the Google Play and Apple iStore. And you brought up something in the break off the air, Scott, that's in California. It's called the CARB program. In about 3, maybe 4 minutes, what is the CARB program? Explain that to us.
Well, again, California has been very aggressive on emissions and things of that nature. Years ago, they actually passed a law that commercial trucks in California needed to be California CARB compliant. And that required the truck to be, I believe it was no more than a 2010, mm-hmm. and they had to have certain emission controls put on the truck that cost between $10,000 and $15,000 to install. And so that, again, put a squeeze on things. Well, what they proposed and what they're working on is within the next 13 years, they want to, number one, they're gonna ban the sale of carbon-emitting tractor or trucks in California in the next 13 years. And then they basically want to eliminate, I think it's by 2047, they want to eliminate the ability of any CO2-emitting vehicle to be serving California. And obviously, we're going back to cost and things of that nature.
Right.
When you and I were together back in the early 90s, there was something going on right in the same area that we were in Laughlin. There was a guy who was doing experimental television. Do you remember what he was working on?
HD.
You and I, we were working at a television station, and we were thinking, HD TV, what is it? It's never going to happen.
We thought he was
right?
a scam artist.
We did. We thought he was a scam artist, and that was in 92. And here we were, like 10, 15 years later, everybody had HGTV.
That's a really good point.
And I'm not going to, and again, I don't want to blow things out and say, that's crazy. They're not, we can't just have all electronic vehicles.
Right.
And, but on the other side of it, when you think about the supply chain with all the lithium and the batteries and the plastic and everything that goes into these components, and the power grid, it's impossible for us with the present technology that we have mm-hmm. and the present power resources that we have to expect that to be something until something actually happens to replace what we have going on right now.
I got you.
And again, it took up until maybe, what, a couple years ago, you still had neighbors throwing out old tube TVs?
Yeah.
You know, it took a while. But you can't just eliminate it completely. You have to kind of wean into it. And I think that's the scary part of it. In our transportation world, you have a truck. I mean, it's $250,000 to buy a truck these days, probably. It's an investment. So how do you take that investment in 10 years, go, oh, don't worry about that. We'll just buy something new. And we won't, we'll be okay with that.
Right. Our next guest is actually on the line, and I'm going to have to say goodbye, Scott. But it's funny you mentioned that. We were just talking about the decoders that the government sent out. Oh, I think it was around 2000, 2001. They sent it to everybody who wanted one. Do you remember that?
Yes.
If you had an aspect ratio TV of 4:3 instead of, what is it, 15:9 instead of the high def, then you could actually still decode that signal coming from the carrier. So,
exactly
yeah,
right.
How antiquated is that? That decoder is now built into every single high definition
every
television.
Every single TV.
Right,
all you
right,
can do
right.
is put an antenna on it again. How about that?
Absolutely. Scott, always great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks
for
having me.
Calling in from Sewickley, Pennsylvania. You know how much I like to say that, right?
You have a great day, my friend.
You too. Thank you. We'll catch you on the other side. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. And coming up next, we'll have Pell Fakhuron from Callbacks 911. We're going to talk about the FTC rule. It's called Click to Cancel. And he's on the line waiting right now. I can't wait to get into commercial break so I can talk to him. Paul LaVoie, Speak Out. We'll continue in a moment. Stay with us. We'll be right back. A little Billy Idol for you running Rebel fans like myself. Of course, Scarlet and Gray every day. I do have a guest on the line. It's Pell. I knew I'd butcher the name, but it wasn't my fault, Pell. It's Fakhuron. And I asked for the phonetic spelling from the contact at your company, and the company's called Chargebacks 911. So anyway, all apologies on this end. Sorry to put you through that traumatic situation there where you heard the wrong name of the company and your name wrong on the air. You know, for someone named LaVoie, I've heard my name said many, many, many different ways, so I apologize.
That's okay. I actually saved you from the full name. It's Pelwasha, so imagine putting that together.
Oh, my. Okay. Speak Out brought to you in part by Arizona Financial Credit Union, also Mojave Community College, SunPower by Esme Electric, SamsGuns.com, the Lewis Team, Remax by the Lake with Team Leader Bobby Lewis and Julie Lewis, Dorita's Place, providing Havasu with all-natural dog and cat food along with pet toys since 2006, and featuring self-service doggy washes, and by Salmon's Air Conditioning, serving the tri-state area for over 52 years, longer than the London Bridge. Ask about Salmon's Superior Maintenance Plan. And again, we're with Pell Fakarian. And I love the title, by the way, Chief Growth Officer. Did you come up with that or did the company?
Oh, I wish I did. So Chief Growth Officer, it's becoming a pretty standard title in market. Historically, it's been, you know, Chief Revenue Officer, which is oversight of all things revenue and customer within an org. And this just gives a little flexibility to do a little bit more and be very forward thinking. So it's new, it's brilliant, and it's here.
I'm a former resource development director, so it seems like it's kind of in that vein there, as far as nonprofits go. So anyway, what is Chargebacks 9/11? Let's start there with the company and what you actually do.
So it's pretty exciting. I'll give you a little bit of background. When we think about transactions as a consumer, we think about the front-end transaction. You do the swipe, off it goes into different rails, settles funds, etc. So what Chargebacks does is we take the post-transaction. So transaction has settled, and we work with merchants, financial institutions, banks in terms of dispute resolution and dispute management for any chargebacks. And just by definition, what a chargeback is if a consumer is displeased with a service from a merchant, doesn't understand it, and wants to refute that with the issuer bank and or the merchant itself, then that comes in through, or most of the transactions absolutely come into our organization, and we help with representing that so that we can enable merchants to have the, you know, the fact base that they need to hopefully redeem and collect against funds.
Oh, I see. So if I go through Chase, they might go through you and then get back to Chase, and then you it's either valid or invalid as far as my complaint goes.
Exactly right. So consumer calls Chase, says, I have this transaction that happened. I either didn't like the experience. Mm-hmm. I didn't get the product. Product wasn't as described. Chase will open up a case. They manage through collecting the initial information and then go through that dispute resolution process with, a company similar or with Chargebacks 911.
Very interesting. So back in March, the Federal Trade Commission proposed a rule requiring companies to have a click-to-cancel option for subscriptions and recurring memberships. All of us are experiencing this right now with the new streaming platforms that are out there. Explain what the click-to-cancel rule is as proposed by the FTC.
So it's an extension of the pre-notification negative option rule. What does that mean? So, again, as a consumer, it is very simple for us to sign up for a subscription model. It's a one-click process. But if you think about the cancellation process attached to it when, you know, you or I or the next person wants to cancel it, it's very cumbersome. There's a lot left for interpretation of the consumer to make decisions, et cetera. So there's a belief that the consumers cannot reap the benefits when marketers and their merchants don't give adequate disclosures. So what this click to cancel is going to force retailers and merchants to do is to be very forward in what the consumer is getting from that subscription, if it is an upgrade, et cetera, but reduce the friction that's attached to the cancellation process.
It's such an interesting topic. We just had a water cooler conversation on this. I was discussing this last week with our station owner, and he was talking about one of the providers, I think it was Roku, and trying to cancel a program or a subscription that he had on Roku. And I suggested, hey, go to your Amazon account. It might be in the purchases there. That's happened to me before, too. So you have this provider, but then they do everything through Amazon. How are subscribers supposed to know that? Are you dealing with that as well?
That's exactly it, right? So the click to cancel is meant to address and deal with exactly that. So it's a very crowded space for subscription billing. And there's many layers when you think about the hierarchy of where that subscription billing actually originates from and starts from. Things such as, you know, end dates, cancellation terms, the benefits of what you're getting on the program are not disclosed. So what this click-to-cancel rule is going to do is, again, force the merchants and the retailers to disclose all of the information to include simplification of the cancellation process. So it, in theory, as it rolls out, it should absolutely make it easier for you and I to find our way to canceling canceling any subscriptions we have.
So now this is a proposed rule. Any indication as to when it will go into effect and actually have some teeth in it?
You know, I suspect that it will, just based on what we've been hearing and reading and the interactions that we have, that we will see this come to life here towards the end of 2023 and early 2024.
Interesting. It really doesn't benefit either party in this world of, you know, partisan politics in that. But how does this actually help consumers, and what does it do to, you would think businesses would be on board with this and want to help consumers be customer friendly and that sort of thing. Like somebody would actually roll this out before the FTC told them to, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, you're spot on with that. So I do think that the retailers and the merchants will be strong enablers for this and supporters of it, and the why. So if you think about it, we have, because of the amount of friction attached, we as consumers become displeased and disloyal to a brand or an entity. So merchants are very, very aware, and retailers, of the potential consequences of not embracing this. Okay. If they don't, it increases customer churn, right? To include voluntary, involuntary, it creates pricing challenges. So the less subscription billers they have, the more that they're going to have to figure out how to manage their pricing from that perspective. And then just think about the brand and reputational damage. All of that leads into real revenue implications for the retailers. So it's bad for business. Layer that on with, you know, branding experience, higher internal costs. I think those are all motivators that will absolutely get the retailers and the merchants aligned in supporting the click-to-cancel rule.
It's also interesting, and you talk about consequences, but what could businesses face real consequences besides a slap on the wrist and a few $1,000 fine? I mean, we're talking about telecommunications companies here that don't even have to worry about FCC fees or anything like that. They're making profits by the billions. What consequences are they going to face?
Yeah, I think it's early to tell right now as to the potential consequences. But if we look at history and we see, you know, history will repeat itself, and the traditional path that it takes is, I'm sure that there will be a period of time that the FTC puts out there to allow merchants, consumers, or merchants and retailers to, you know, move into the rules and being compliant. And that typically is, you know, I'll call it 12, 24 months. And then they will, you know, write out what the penalties look like post that. So today it's not established, at least based on, you know, very recent readings that I've had, but it will absolutely be down the line after that adoption period is granted for the retailers and the merchants.
So I'm not going to say which streaming services that I'm specifically referring to here, but I've had cases where I've done a free trial. I set up in my Outlook or in a calendar an alarm to cancel that, you know, after 7 days or whatever. And then I go into cancel, and I go 3-4 layers deep into frequently asked questions sometimes. It's really difficult to find these links to cancel a subscription service. Are they going to be required to actually put it on the front page or somewhere in the top third of the website? Where's this button or link going to be?
Yeah, so the push is to have the link on the where, on the page, wherever it may be in that journey of signing up for the subscription billing, where the journey is where you accept the subscription charges. It is meant to be and directed that the cancellation is on that same screen and same page. So today, if a merchant has it on page one, right, the lead-in is to have it in that same place. So, again, it's about making it very simple and ensuring that we as consumers, I think what you described, right, if you feel a little tricked and a little trapped of how do I get out of this subscription, that may actually lend itself to, I'll try later, and then now you've said it and forgotten about it. So because of that, and to eliminate that, the guidance is that where you have the acceptance for the consumer, the cancellation should be on that same page.
Yeah, we're all used to having to leave the app, you know, or the Fire Stick or wherever we're watching the program on HBO or whatever, Hulu, and having to go back to a phone or a computer to go to the website to tailor the service to our needs and that sort of thing. It would seem like you'd have a button that says, you know, edit subscription, cancel subscription. Really simple.
Exactly, in
my book. But how do you think this is going to affect retailers? Have there been any studies done on dollar amounts, that sort of thing, if they do make this easier for consumers?
I think early to tell right now, but there is some major effects on retailers. I touched on the high churn and making it very difficult to cover acquisition costs and be able to scale. I mean, subscription modeling, if you think about it, or subscription billing, it is very common regardless of sector and vertical that you're looking at nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
So the adoption of it is high. It can also dampen the demand and make it harder to acquire net new customers. And then, you know, there is the big, you know, we talked about chargebacks, 911, managing the post-transaction, dispute management of it.
Right.
It can absolutely increase the amount of chargebacks that you have from a consumer perspective, which, again, has significant commercial impact to you as a retailer. So the consequences are all very commercial. Connected to, again, customer churn, branding, pricing, things that you have to consider.
So again, we're talking to Pell Fakarian, and I said that correctly, right?
You certainly did.
All right, perfect. We're talking about the click to cancel rule from the Federal Trade Commission, and Pell is from Chargebacks 911. She's the chief growth officer. I was thinking that a click to cancel button would actually decrease the demand for a company like yours, but you say it's going to increase?
No, well, what it can do, I think it'll increase the win ratios. The demand for a company like ours is absolutely there and has been there for a long time, for a number of different reasons. What happens is today, when a retailer does get that chargeback or merchant gets that chargeback, their win ratios could be negatively impacted and not performing at the place that they are. With the simplicity of the click to cancel, it makes it very, very easy to provide the evidence needed on behalf of that merchant and that retailer so that they don't have the negative impact of the chargeback. So it's a very healthy position. What I was lending to was that if merchants do not embrace the click to cancel, do not embrace the simplicity that the FTC is putting forward, it can increase the number of chargebacks that retailer or merchant receives.
Oh, I
see. Because of a poor experience.
Yeah, tell me, there's a term in my notes called friendly fraud. Explain what that is.
So friendly fraud is a couple of things. I talked a little bit about set it and forget it, right? The buyer's remorse that might be attached to it. Free stuff where, you know, I'm trying to, you know, try my luck at getting products or services for free after use and I don't get it. So there isn't any criminal activity attached to it by definition of what we, you know, look at criminal activity, but it is a consumer who, again, displeased with the service, buyer's remorse. So now they are coming back and asking for a, you know, refund essentially, or charging back that transaction because of an experience they had versus a legitimate reason why they should be refunded the money that they had spent on that. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
So I order a handbag and it delivers behind my door. Or let's say it doesn't get delivered. I call my bank and say, hey, I placed this order, you know, didn't receive the handback. That is a very legitimate case that can get disputed.
Sure.
We have a lot of instances where a handbag gets delivered, you know, behind, I'll call it again, behind my door. I look at it and I'm like, yeah, the quality of it really isn't what I like. Or, you know, I might call the issuing bank and say, hey, I got the bag. I'm displeased with it. You know, it's not the quality of what I want. I want to refute the charge attached to that. That today can get reimbursed to me and falls under the definition of a friendly fraud, right? It's again, a very simple quality judgment that I'm putting against it versus a legitimate, I never got the package and don't have something tangible in return for my purchase.
Yeah, because you still keep the bag, correct?
Exactly right.
You didn't have to send it back.
Social media has pictures of me everywhere with a bag showing, you know, I'm getting every bit of value from it.
Right, right. So back to the click to cancel rule, is that only for subscription-based viewing or audio services like Pandora or Apple Music or something like that? Or is it also for, like, Amazon has subscriptions now to buy recurring items? Is it for that as well?
It is for any. So it's meant as an umbrella across any sector, retailer, vertical that has a subscription billing model. So think about even gym memberships, right? So it's the simplest of a gym membership to my food delivery that shows up behind my door to, you know, my telecom subscriptions that I might have. So it doesn't pertain to a specific vertical. It is across everything that does subscription billing.
Interesting. How long have you been with Chargebacks 911?
So I have been here for 7 months, but I have been in the payments industry for close to 25 years. So I spent some time inside the major banks and the acquiring side of the relationship, and then fascinated by the product that the founder has built and decided that I was going to change my career chapter. So it's been 7 months and amazing time so far.
Oh, really interesting. Congratulations on the move, by the way. So you've probably seen the models and the graphs and back to where the company was during the pandemic and that. How is the company performing since then?
Very well. So the pandemic, it impacted all of us, obviously, and it changed a lot of consumer behavior. And really elevated subscription billing, if anything, right? The simplicity of it, the accuracy of it, et cetera. And our company, you know, took that time to sit inward and come back out to market with enhanced capabilities around our solution set of managing disputes and the value that we put forward in that. So it's really enabled us and continued to support us in swimming upstream to some of the very major global brands and global platforms. So it's been exciting.
This is all just fascinating, and that's exactly where I was leading, because during the pandemic there were so many people subscribing to services. And anyway, I'm glad to see the government, the FTC, a huge government agency, is doing something about this. It's very encouraging. I just hope that this proposed rule becomes an implemented rule.
I have every bit of confidence that it will absolutely become an implemented rule. It just is going to take us a little bit of time to get ourselves there. But as I mentioned, you know, it should be something that we see come to life and maturity by the end of this year and or early next year.
I gotcha. Pell Fakarian, thank you for being on the program today on Speak Out. We really appreciate you calling in.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
All right. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks so much.
All right.
And we'll come back with more. I'll give you a little bit of a community calendar and what's happening in the tri-state when we return on Speak Out. Stay with us. A little post Dio Rainbow. Don't want to get into that. It's just a sour note, but I love the song. All right. So I'm told there's a bingo at the Elks Lodge 468 in Kingman every Monday and Thursday. Doors open at 11 a.m. both days. Games start at noon. The location is 900 Gates Avenue in Kingman. You're going to want to call Anthony Butel, 928-757-5091 for more information. And my bet, my bingo bet, is that Anthony's going to call me and say, I'm not the contact, but that's what they left me. So there you go. All right, on tomorrow's show, of course, it's the Real Estate Power Hour. Boom! And that's, of course, with Bobby Lewis from RE/MAX by the Lake and Chad Hansen, founder and CEO of Mojave Mortgage. Until then, you will not have Speak Out 2.0 tomorrow. Larry's going to take a day off. And we're going to go into Hannity next after news and a short break. Have a great day, everyone.
This is KNTR Talk, KGJJ HD2 Laughlin. Heard on 106.7 FM, 106.5, and 106.3. The voice of the free.